Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson, coming to you this hour from Colorado Public Radio in Denver. And joining me, as always, is Tolliver. Hey, Tolliver.
Hey, Jeremy. Hey, I'm not with you in person right now, but I can confirm Colorado Public Radio has the best snacks in the game.
The best snacks.
Sorry, I know. Nashville.
They did feed me before the show. It was lovely. Now, so here's a fun fact for you, Tolliver, because you know that The Middle is also available as a podcast in partnership with iHeart Podcasts on the iHeart app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Well, since we started this show last September, a city that has consistently been at the top of our list for downloads of the podcast is Denver, Colorado. So here we are, and we're here as Coloradans prepare to mark 25 years since the mass shooting at Columbine High School. That'll be next month. We're going to be asking what should be done to reduce gun violence in America. We're taking your calls at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353 in just a moment. But first, last week, we asked you if it's time for a strong, viable third party in the United States as we march toward a rematch between current President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump in the November election. Here are some of the voicemails that came in after the show.
Hi, my name is Jeannie. I'm calling from New Orleans, Louisiana.
This is Chris Samuels calling from Newburgh, Indiana.
Hey, Jeremy. I'm Marty from Jacksonville.
My name is James. I'm calling from Eagle River, Alaska. How on earth are Donald Trump and Joe Biden are the only two candidates that can be produced to represent the people of this great nation?
The way it stands now, if Biden and Trump are running, there's absolutely no way anyone else is going to win. So if you vote for one of the third party candidates, it's the dumbest thing anybody could do.
It's a mistake to vote for a third-party candidate because it just helps get elected the candidate that you least want.
I will take a third, fourth, fifth other party, whomever, I don't care. Elmo could run, for heaven's sake. I would vote for him.
For Elmo. Thanks so much to everyone who called in. You would vote for Elmo. So now to our topic this hour, which is what should be done to reduce gun violence in America. It was 25 years ago next month that the nation was shocked by the news of a mass shooting at Columbine High School.
We are following a breaking story today, a shooting at a high school in Littleton, Colorado, that's near Denver. Here is what we know so far. Witnesses say two gunmen dressed in black trench coats with black masks opened fire at Columbine High School about lunchtime in Colorado. They said the gunmen went from one area of the school to another, shooting students as they went.
At the time, Columbine was the deadliest mass killing at a K-12 school in American history, but it was later surpassed by Sandy Hook in 2012, Parkland in 2018, and Uvalde in 2022. And in the nearly 25 years since Columbine, guns and how to go about regulating them while respecting the Second Amendment to the Constitution has remained one of the most contentious debates in America. But is there a middle ground on this issue? What should be done to reduce gun violence in America?
Our number is 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also email us by going to listentothemiddle.com.
And let's meet our panel here with me in the studio in Denver, Emmy Betts, emergency physician and director of the Firearm Injury Prevention Initiative at the University of Colorado. Emmy, welcome to The Middle.
Thanks for having me.
And John Brackney is here as well, a longtime civic and business leader in Colorado, a veteran Army officer, and an advocate for responsible gun ownership. John, welcome to you.
Hi, Jeremy.
So before we get to the phones, and they are starting to light up, Emmy, Columbine was a mass shooting. It was also a school shooting. But most of the gun violence that occurs in this country, and we're talking almost 50,000 deaths a year, is neither of those things.
Right. And thank you for starting off with that. I think it's incredibly important that when we talk about gun violence, we look at the full picture. So in the United States as a whole, over half of all gun deaths are suicide. Mm. Here in Colorado, it's over 70% of gun deaths are suicide. In the nation as a whole, so the majority are suicide, followed then by homicide, usually interpersonal violence, particularly in urban areas. Mass shootings account for only about 1% of all deaths. I don't want to discount the incredible psychological toll that they have on our country, but I think we really need to move away from thinking about only the mass shootings and only the things that capture media attention and recognize the violence that's happening really to all of us and all of our communities every day, because each of those is a life lost.
Yeah.
And people left grieving, and they're all preventable.
We'll get to that. But John, in an op-ed for the Denver Post, you wrote that gun owners are equally distressed over gun violence as non-gun owners, likely more so. That's what you said. So what do gun owners like you think ought to be done legislatively, let's say, to reduce gun violence?
Well, thank you. More important than legislatively is culturally. And so I think if we approach it in that way, I do mean it. Gun owners are good, decent people, and it hurts really bad to think about a weapon that they would own that would be used for ill intent. And so to reach out to that person culturally, and that's a hard thing to do. It's probably harder than legislation. So I'm open to discuss legislation, but I think this is more of a cultural issue of
violence. What do you mean reach out to that person culturally? Reach out to the would-be shooter culturally?
No, to a gun owner. Gun owners. I mean, there's just so many guns in America and so many gun owners in America that to alienate them and to take angst and anger out them, I actually think it's self-defeating. I think it's the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be having conversations like this.
Emmy, what about legislatively? Do you think that gun control laws work?
So I'm also going to advocate that we shift the focus a little bit away from legislation. Hmm. So at the Firearm Injury Prevention Initiative, we specifically don't do legislative advocacy, in part because it's so contentious, but more so because there's so much that can be done through education, through interventions. And I want to second this whole idea of cultural change. I mean, when we think about the suicide deaths, for example, many, if not the majority, are among gun owners. And so if we want to reach populations of gun owners about how to prevent those suicides, how to prevent those deaths, we need to be doing it in a way that's bringing them into the conversation rather than sort of immediate alienation. And so I love the idea of us maybe tonight as a start trying to find a way to find this middle space to talk about this. Legislation can be part of the solution, and we should not be taking it off the table. But I think we get so caught up in the politics that we lose sight of all the other things we can be doing.
Okay, let's go to the phones. And Dylan, who's in Lakewood, Colorado. Dylan, welcome to The Middle. What do you think?
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I just want to say that I was a student in Jeffco when Columbine happened. And this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. I'm also a public teacher in Jeffco.
Jefferson County, I assume, is what you're talking about there.
Correct. The issue for guns is, as a teacher, is a really interesting one, because obviously I'm constantly thinking about that happening at school or in public places. If we're not going to talk about legislation, which I hear the panel talking about, then my question is, how do we change it culturally? Because there seems to just be this huge divide where we can't even talk amongst ourselves about the issue. I think if we're not going to go for legislation, then I think we need to put a ton of funding into mental health. And let's put our money where our mouths are, in terms of saying, if guns aren't the problem, which that could be a whole discussion, but if guns aren't the problem, then where's the money to culturally go after the issue.
Great. Well, let me ask that the panel that question. Thank you, Dylan, for that call. John,
so
yeah, what did you mean by culturally?
Sure, and I mean culturally an umbrella over mental health issues. So after Columbine, I was an Arapahoe County Commissioner at that time, and the South Metro Denver Chamber was integrally involved in providing support to not only Jefferson, but Littleton Public Schools, where I went and where our daughters went. For 15 years, once a week and once a month for 15 years, community leaders gathered together. So mental health, religious leaders, schools, city council, sheriff's department gathered together to talk about holistically on why some people resort to violence. So we counted on CU, and the Center for Prevention for Violence out of CU, Del Elliott's work, and there's risk factors in all of us, and there's protective factors. Mm-hmm. And some people have a lot of protective factors. We're probably examples of that in this room. Have a lot of resources if we start to go astray, and hopefully our risks aren't as bad. But that combination, when you don't have enough of one and have a lot of others, leads some people to do some really bad things in life, including violence. And so I think we should take a really holistic effort to try to minimize all sorts of violence.
Well, so what about something like red flag laws?
That would fall under that.
Emmy?
Yeah, so thank you, Dylan, for your thoughts. So when we talk about risk factors and also protective factors, I think maybe the number one thing for when we think about suicide risk, particularly among teens who are also at risk of hurting other people, is access to guns. So if there's one thing from tonight that I would love people to take away, it's that if you have guns in your home, they should be stored so they are not accessible to the people who shouldn't be accessing them. And I would argue that includes little kids, but also teenagers, because they have mm-hmm. crazy impulsive emotions. They also should be protected from theft and so forth. And someone who's going through a bad divorce, substance abuse, depression, etc., also should not have access to guns. And so that's the cultural change that we need to get to. And I would argue, if you think about, for example, what we did with things like Friends Don't Let Friends Drive Drunk, or
right.
So some of that might have been legislation, and some of it might have been penalties or incentives, but a lot of it was things like broad media campaigns, mm-hmm. and that is actually coming. It's being worked on. I think we're going to be seeing more and more around secure storage in the year to come.
Well, yeah, and let me just ask you briefly, John. Do your friends who are gun owners, do they store their weapons safely, securely?
It's probably across the board, like the rest of humanity. I will tell you though that I did. We had two little girls, and after they were not just little crawling around, my guns were weapons mm-hmm. were very well protected, and they still are, because I really don't feel like I have a threat towards myself or mm-hmm. my home.
You know, Tolliver, it's easy to forget that we did for a time have a ban on so-called assault weapons in this country.
Yeah, Jeremy, here's former President Bill Clinton speaking in 1994 when he signed a national assault weapons ban into law.
Will this solve all the problems in America? No. This is a puzzle. We're trying to fill in the puzzle with the crime bill. But I'm telling you, this is an amazing, it's amazing to me that we even have to have this debate. I mean, how long are we going to let this go on?
Well, that assault weapons ban only went on for 10 years. It expired in 2004 and was not renewed.
Right.
I want to remind our podcast listeners, if you are a big fan of the podcast, please rate the podcast and then get your friends to rate the podcast. Mm-hmm. How many stars, Tolliver?
Five stars.
Five stars.
Get
That's
your
right.
cousins, your mom, all of them.
We'll be back with more of the middle.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of. A degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show. We're focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, and philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. And this hour, we're asking you what should be done to reduce gun violence. Tolliver, what is the number to call in?
It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also write to us at listentothemiddle.com or on social media, which a lot of people are doing right now.
And we are joined by Emmy Betts, an emergency physician and director of the Firearm Injury Prevention Initiative at the University of Colorado, and John Brackney, a longtime civic and business leader here in Colorado, a veteran Army officer and an advocate for responsible gun ownership. Before we get back to the phones, Emmy Betts, suicide, as we said, is the leading cause of gun-related deaths. Almost 27,000 Americans died by suicide using a firearm in 2022, which is the most recent year for figures. What have you learned from your research about the best way to address that problem?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So it's really important to emphasize that suicide is preventable. Yes, people need access to mental health care, substance abuse treatment, et cetera, sort of the bigger picture of what it is that's going to help them get through their mental health crisis. But while they're getting that treatment, it's incredibly important that they not have access to lethal means. By which I mean anything that can be used to die by suicide. Firearms are the most lethal method of suicide. About 90% of the time they result in death, which is why we talk about specifically reducing access to firearms during times of suicide risk. And when I say that, I mean generally temporary and voluntary changes. So it's about engaging the adult who's at risk themselves and their family in making decisions about storing guns differently so that the person doesn't have access. We know that periods of suicidality can be fairly brief and impulsive. And so if you can get someone through even that one day of risk, the likelihood that they will die is much, much lower. People don't just substitute another method. And even if they do, if they can't get access to the gun, it's far more likely that they'll survive.
Although if it's a suicide we're talking about, it's quite possible that they would be the one that has the access to the gun, to their
Correct.
Own gun.
So I work as an ER doctor. I care for lots of people with suicide risk. The conversation I have with them is about, while you're getting better, can someone else in your home take control of the weapon? Mm-hmm. So, for example, change the passcode on your safe so that you can't get to it, but your wife or whoever else still can. Mm-hmm. Can you temporarily move it out of the home until you're feeling better? And so it's a conversation with them about for themselves no longer having access.
Let's go to Robert, who's in Houston, Texas. Robert, welcome to The Middle. What do you think can be done to reduce gun violence?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have an all-expansive answer to that question, but I think the first step before we can even have just an open and honest discussion with the entire country about it is, as you noted, I'm from Texas. I mean, I'm in the quote-unquote ground zero of gun culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing against responsible gun owners or hunters or anyone just by virtue of being a gun owner or owning more than one gun, but it just, people really take it on as like, it's not just a political issue. It's part of their core cultural identity. Hmm. I mean, like if you're making any noise towards gun control, they perceive it as not just a policy discussion, but you're basically attacking them directly and their families families directly and their ways of life directly. And
yeah,
that's where they really fetishize gun ownership to the point of, you know, T-shirts that say, you know, my second car is my AR-15, or follow
yeah
me for more
yeah
ammunition, or...
Robert, I think we've got your point. The fetishization of guns and how people really see them as part of their core. John, to you on that.
So I hope I'm not as far as fetishing, but I am one of those folks that not only identify with it culturally, it's in some ways, in part of its training, it's an extension of my core being. It's the time with my father shooting weapons off the side of the road when I was six. It's my military training and sleeping with my M16. It's more than just a cultural thing. It's actually an extension of how I protect myself and everybody I love. And in, by extension, how we protect America and everything we love about America. So I get that, Texas, but it's also in Colorado. And many of my friends are that way. So how to take it from a rational, responsible gun ownership and help those people that have just gone too far. Because I think most people, if they have a friend that they admire, respect, appreciate, mm-hmm, love, they might take that suicide thought better from somebody who's also like them culturally. Hey, really, you're mm-hmm doing okay? We need to, why don't I take your weapons instead of the government taking your weapons? Why don't you have a friend take care of them? I think that's really important.
Let's go to Bethany, who's in Longmont, Colorado. Bethany, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Yes, thank you. I kind of want to build off the last gentleman's statement here. And absolutely, I can get behind responsible gun ownership. You know, the need to protect your family. I grew up in Memphis, which is a very dangerous city. So I totally understand the need for handguns, for defending your family, you know, even for rifles, for hunting and things like that. But my real question that I think bothers me is that I absolutely do not think the founding fathers, when writing the Second Amendment, had any inkling that there would be, you know, these automatic assault weapons that could shoot hundreds of bullets a minute and cause mass destruction and be in the hands of regular citizens. And kind of like the last gentleman, I feel like any rational kind of attempt to regulate that, like, excessively dangerous level of weapon being had by just a regular human for mm-hmm fun is an attack on all guns, which I personally don't think that any normal person has any reason to have a weapon that dangerous. You want right to protect your family? Fine. A handgun will do the trick. So I just don't understand how we bridge that gap. That's not the intention of the Second Amendment, and we're not trying to take your guns away.
Yeah.
We're just trying to protect people.
Yeah, Bethany, thank you for that. A lot there, Emmy, and I know that your organization and you don't take a particular position on things like an assault weapons ban, which, you know, Joe Biden, the president, has called for nationally. As we said, it used to exist between 1994 and 2004. There are states, including this one, that are trying to put in a ban on the purchase and sale of assault weapons. But it does get to a core issue that I'm sure you've thought a lot about, which is the Second Amendment and what it really meant back in the day and what it means today, and how much of a problem it is that Americans have access to assault weapons and high capacity magazines.
Yeah, it's really you're getting right to the heart of it. And I appreciate the comments from Robert and Bethany. And I think so I'm also not a constitutional scholar and I'm not an attorney. I'm a physician and researcher. I think what it's really getting to is how do we in modern society, as a wonderful, chaotic, mixed up country, which is what I love about America, how do we recognize where our desires or our fetishes or our very strong political views, where do they end when they clash with somebody else's? And how do we have those conversations in recognizing, as Bethany said, you know, where is that line between responsible firearm ownership, but then something that maybe is too extreme? How do we have that conversation? And we need to be able to have those conversations in ways that are not demonizing either side. And I think it is really important that we listen to the concerns and the perspectives and the worldviews and all of it across the spectrum, but then also recognize, like, we live in a complicated mixed society, mm-hmm. and we don't always get exactly what we want. I mean, compromise is how we also get to a safer place, and a safer and healthier place, right? And I think what's sad is that it feels like in politics mm-hmm. today there is no longer any compromise or discussion, and that we're just getting more and more stuck in yelling at each other instead of actually thinking about what works for modern society.
Or when there is compromise in politics, it just doesn't make the news because it's not as exciting as a huge fight.
Hey, Jeremy, we actually have a lot of comments coming in on social media right now. If I can pivot to that real quick. Jeff on Twitter writes, a living wage, affordable housing, and Medicare for all that includes mental health services. Happy, healthy people with a place to call their own rarely feel the need to shoot each other. Mandate liability insurance for guns. More dangerous the gun, more expensive insurance. We've got over 300 comments so far.
Wow. All right. Well, keep them coming. You can go to listentothemiddle.com or find us on social media. Let's go to Dan, who's in York, Pennsylvania, on the old-fashioned phone. Dan, welcome to The Middle. What do you think?
I think we need to talk about the corporate culture also. I think the opioid crisis was caused by drug companies over-promoting and over-producing. I think the tobacco industry was held responsible for some of what it did by over-promoting cigarettes and the like. I think the gun companies as a whole are over-promoting gun ownership.
So you go after the gun companies, that's how you would reduce gun violence, is to go after the gun companies in the way that this country has gone after tobacco or pharma?
They're over-promoting, they've been promoting in ways that go after the young mm-hmm. people that are far too young to have gun ownership.
Dan, great point. Thank you so much. John, I'll take that to you. What do you think about that, the power of the gun industry?
I don't totally disagree. I mean, there's good points in that. I would throw in the entertainment industry, though, and our glorification glorification of violence on a lot of things we do, and we just are blind to that. I don't think it causes it, but I do think it's a contributing factor to our cultural psyche. We have an expert here.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to agree with that, and I think that, again, part of that cultural change, we really need to be emphasizing that the decision to own a firearm is a big one and is a serious responsibility that people need to take seriously and get training and think about storage and appropriate use and all of that, that it shouldn't just be sort of a spur-of-the-moment whim decision.
I want to go to Middletown, Connecticut, and Ryan, who is joining us. Ryan, go ahead. What do you think?
So I think I grew up in Chicago and worked in the inner city with kids of all varying degrees of ability, and one of the things I see a lot is that the attitudes of their parents become their attitudes early on, and then they find people that are like-minded in that regard and they build on themselves. So I think this is a multi-generational issue. It's like in the military, when you go overseas, the first people we try to make good with is not the adults. We try to give out treats and little goodies to the kids so that they see America as a good country. And that's the same here, back here at home. We have to start with the youth and help them see guns as something not to be feared, but to be respected. It's like a car. We have such a culture built up around the car being this dangerous, very, you have to go to all these classes and take all of these different things and take a test and, pay a bunch of money for it. And we feed that into our kids, and all our TV shows do the same. What do you see about the gun?
Ryan, thank you for that. John, what about that?
The more experience you have around weapons, the more the better. The people that I admire most are ones that treat it with an awesome level of responsibility and respect and are very aware of how dangerous they are. Another show we should talk about, a year of voluntary service in the military.
That caller just said that they grew up in Chicago. Tolliver, you grew up in Chicago. Did your family have guns? Like, did you grow up with that as part of your upbringing?
Yeah, you know what they did. My family is a military family, and I just remember distinctly hearing them say over and over that if we banned gun ownership, that people would just find a way to get guns illegally. And I kind of wanted to bring that to our panel, like to our guests here, because that's the thing that I heard over and over and over as a kid. Is there any validity to that to y'all?
Emmy?
Yeah, I mean, so yes and no. And I think to answer your question, what I want to take this to the bigger issue, which is that we're dancing around a bunch of different topics that are all really important. And I hope that they are getting across the point that there is not one solution to this because gun violence is a big and messy problem. And it's suicide and it's youth violence, particularly in urban areas. And it's domestic violence and mass shootings and school shootings. And each of those is going to take a slightly different approach. So is the problem of illegal gun markets a real problem? Absolutely. And you know what? Gun owners who are not locking guns in cars and guns being stolen, like the gun owners are part of the problem there. And we need to be talking about responsible storage of guns in cars and making sure they're locked up. You know, does that mean that we should just throw up our hands and say, what does it matter? Because they'll just find a gun. Like, of course not. But, you know, I mean, but I think it's about recognizing that each of these things we've been talking about tonight may be effective in some ways. But for example, me talking about secure storage of guns at home, that is not going to fix what's going on with a 13-year-old who's got a bad home situation, who's failing school. Like, that kid needs a very different intervention.
Well, or the mass shooter that buys the gun the day before they go and shoot up a school or something like that. Let's get to another call before we have to take a quick break. Denise is in Denver, Colorado. Denise, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. So I volunteer with Moms Demand Action, and one of the things I really appreciate that you're talking about is that it is this myriad of things. It's this tapestry of answers. It's not one thing. So I think about legislation. We can have all kinds of legislation. Secure storage in Colorado is actually part of our legislation, and that is one thing that can really go across all communities. There are some things that don't necessarily reach into all communities, but we also have communities that have, like other states, where permitless carry is now the law. So people don't have to even have ever taken a class. So even though we say that there should be responsible gun ownership, there are places where we're actually making that not be the case. So to me, that is a big issue. And the fact that I know mental health and all these things that we talk about, but when you look at peer nations, all nations have mental health. All nations have people playing video games, but they are not having the same kind of gun deaths. And so I think that's something that we have to be mindful of. And it is that whole tapestry of things that we have to do.
Denise, thank you so much for that call. And, you know, that is something that comes up after every mass shooting, is the fact that, you know, no other country has this kind of problem with gun homicides, suicides. We are just much higher than other countries on that score. John.
There's no doubt that we have a long history of societal violence and individual violence. And I think where the suicide is such a fascinating one, but where I come down on this is how to take somebody who's innocent, who's vulnerable, and who is a victim of somebody's either temporary insanity or violence or evil or all the multitude of variations that somebody could hurt. How do we have that? How do we have less of that? And I think if we look for common ground, there'll be much more of it if we don't demonize the other side. If we look at what you're doing, what are your ideas?
If the gun owners are not demonizing the people that want more regulation and vice versa. Want to stand by for a minute because the middle is available as a podcast in partnership with iHeart Podcasts on the iHeart app or wherever you listen to podcasts. And Tolliver, we've been talking broadly about guns and gun violence, but nothing intensifies this conversation nationally as much as when a mass shooting takes place.
Yeah, and oftentimes right after a mass shooting takes place, people who call for stronger gun laws are told, now's not the time for that debate. Listen here to former Colorado Governor Bill Owens, the last Republican to lead the state, speaking right after Columbine.
I think that we have to look into society at what caused these kids to become killers, and it's going to be a little tougher, unfortunately, than passing or not passing a few laws.
Notable, Tolliver, that just this week, Colorado Democrats passed a bill through a House committee that would ban the sale or purchase of assault weapons in the state. And while they discussed that bill, hundreds of people lined up to comment and dozens of protesters were outside as well. We will be back with more of The Middle.
This is it. Your moment.
This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We're coming to you from Colorado Public Radio in Denver as the state prepares to mark 25 years since Columbine. And we're asking you what should be done to reduce gun violence in America. You can call us at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or you can reach out at listentothemiddle.com. We're joined by Emmy Betts, director of the Firearm Injury Prevention Initiative at the University of Colorado, and John Brackney, a longtime civic and business leader here in Colorado and advocate for responsible gun ownership. And let's get right back to the phones because they are full. Michael is in Joliet, Illinois. Michael, go ahead.
Hello. First thing I want to mention is that a lot of my opinion is informed by my having worked as a prison psychologist for 20 years. I just retired in December. And what I've learned is that your typical criminal cares nothing about gun laws. They know they're illegal. They know that extended magazines are illegal. They don't care. They know that converting a gun to fully automatic is illegal. They don't care. They see it as a necessary tool. Now, what gets their attention is if they get serious consequences. And in Cook County, Illinois, that's typically not the case. Until relatively recently, you could get boot camp, a four-month sentence for illegal possession of a firearm. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we need to enforce current laws. Perfect example, the Kyle Rittenhouse case. He and his partner in crime, Dominic Black, engaged in an illegal straw weapon purchase, a weapon that was ultimately used to kill two people, wound another. No, in violation of federal law, no consequences. President Biden's aware of the case. Yeah. Supposedly there was a judiciary committee that looked into it. I haven't heard any results. He's walking around free. His supporters have made him a millionaire, and he's touting himself as a Second Amendment.
So the issue of enforcing the laws and
those current laws.
Yeah, Michael, thank you, Emmy Betts. That's an issue that I've been reading about in preparation for this show. Is that in many cases, local police departments in some places don't enforce the laws that are on the books. Is how much of a problem is that the laws we do have around gun regulation aren't being enforced?
Yeah, it's a great question, and certainly is going to, like, when you think about the whole U.S. and different state laws and local jurisdiction, whether they support them or not. You know, with extreme risk protection orders, for example, we had the issue of Second Amendment sanctuary counties where some of those counties were at least saying they weren't going to enforce them. We've actually seen in Colorado that some of those self-declared counties actually have used extremist protection orders, which I think is evidence that there are extreme cases where people want those laws on the books. But absolutely, when we think about this from as researchers from a public health perspective, we need to be looking at laws, how they're actually implemented, meaning are people aware of the laws? Are they enforced? Is there adequate punishment? Exactly. Are laws applied fairly based on the person? You know, we spend a lot of time thinking about things like profiling and so forth. And I think that the caller earlier from Moms Demand Action was talking about the potential promise of legislation. Legislation absolutely is a tool that we should still be talking about. But it's not just getting a law passed. Ultimately, it is how is that law used and does it have the intended effect?
And will it be allowed by the current Supreme Court as well?
Right.
Which at the end of the day is what matters in this case with these laws. Dean in Minneapolis, Minnesota is with us. Hi, Dean. Welcome to the middle.
Thank you. And thank you to your panel. And I want to acknowledge and agree with the cultural things that have been spoken about. I'm a firearm owner most of my life, and all of my firearms are locked up. And I have been a part of situations where I've helped friends or children of friends remove their firearms from their home in times of issues. However, I do think there's legislation and things that can be done beyond just the cultural things. And as a gun owner, I'd like to just bring those to bear. I grew up in Illinois, and there's a firearm owner's identification program there, and I wish that was nationwide. I think legislatively, if you have a FOID card, you can enact and hold a lot of the other, utilize a lot of the other gun laws that are in place, like red flag laws, like waiting periods, like straw man purchases. So if there was a national FOID program, I think that would be useful. The other thing, when I lived in Richmond, Virginia, working in communications, I worked on the Project Exile program as a gun owner, where any crime committed using a firearm became a federal offense. And that criminal, like one of your earlier callers just said, that criminal now goes to a federal facility rather than to a state facility. And I think that puts a lot more emphasis on the illegal use of firearms, as well as the FOID card supporting the legal use of firearms.
Dean, let me ask you just one thing real quick, Dean, which is, you know, one of the legislative options that's been talked about is a national assault weapons ban. Do you, as a gun owner, do you want that?
Well, I own two firearms that would be considered assault rifles. Both of those are semi-automatics. I know people mess that up all the time. If those firearms were banned, I would gladly turn them in. The reason I hold them today, they are fun to shoot, but I will tell you, I don't want to sell them and then end up in the hands of someone who's going to use them improperly. If those firearms were banned, honestly,
I would have no
problem turning those in. Right now, my only option is to decommission them myself.
Okay. Dean, very interesting. Thank you so much for that call. And let me get to another one here. Lee is in New Orleans, Louisiana. Lee, go ahead. Welcome to the middle.
Well, very good conversation tonight. Let me start out by saying it is not the gun that is the problem. We've touched on a lot of things, education, responsibility, the lack of comprehensive mental health in the country. Many of the things that happen are because the children or even young adults haven't been carried along the way responsibly. You know, parents working, drug abuse. But the guy from Joliet, Illinois, hit it on the head. In New Orleans Parish County, like Cook County, the crime that comes with guns is generally stolen weapons. It's gunslingers on the street. It's dope dealing. Seldom do we have the issue of people responsible, God-fearing gun owners aren't the ones out there shooting people. And it's not if we magically erase guns from society. Does anybody on this panel think for a second that angry, hell-bent people are not going to take out their wrath with other, you know, with pickaxe or machete or something that's not the gun?
Let me take that to the panel, Lee.
Banning automatic weapons is a silly idea because they're not anybody with automatic weapons pay a premium to possess them and own them, and they're very responsible people.
Okay, Lee, thank you very much for that call. And I have to say, one of my favorite accents in the entire United States is New Orleans.
Like,
but it's just such a great accent. But what about the point that he is making there, John, which we heard also from our caller from Joliet, that, you know, the criminals aren't going to pay attention to the laws on the books?
Generally, I would concur with those points. But I do think there's common ground when we don't think there would be common ground. And he's hit on it a little bit with the semi versus fully automatic weapon. Totally different, and people confuse that are anti-gun. But we do restrict guns in all sorts of ways. None of us have a hand grenade in our garage, I hope. None of us have an F-16 or an M1A1 Abrams tank. At a certain point, we realize some things are just too dangerous. And there is the Nevada shooting. There is common ground in that when you have all those semi-automatic assault weapons. I don't use that word, but rifles. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point when you can just kill dozens of people randomly in the audience, there's all sorts of us that took a pause and said, no, we've got to at least bump. I didn't know what a bump stock was, but we should ban that. And do you really? I'm not sure I want to have an investigation on how many guns somebody has. But at a certain point, there's got to be a red flag somewhere in that system to say that enough's enough. This is just too dangerous.
So let me just ask you, Emmy, because we've been talking a lot this hour, which has been kind of a surprise, about the cultural issues rather than legislative issues or other things on the issue of guns. But when you look at the mass shootings that have occurred in the last 10 years, 255 mass shootings in the U.S. in 2013, 656 in 2023. That's a lot more. So what's going on there? You think that's a cultural issue? You think that's availability? What's happening?
It's a complicated question. I think it's all of those things together. There's also some research coming out showing that an estimated maybe half of mass shootings are actually related to domestic violence. So it depends a little bit how you define a mass shooting. Most mass shootings are not actually the school shootings that are particularly awful, and as a parent, I don't even really like to think about. But when we think about a person who's killing multiple people, often suicide at the same time, very often it's related to family violence, domestic violence, which we haven't even touched on this hour in terms of thinking about, you know, violence and relationship and what leads to that. And there is a lot of upstream stuff, you know, whether it's isolation or loneliness or mental health or what the often younger people who are doing mass shootings, what has gotten them to that point. I also, though, I want to respectfully disagree with that last caller. The gun itself is part of the problem. I mean, I think we need to recognize guns are uniquely lethal. That is why people buy them for protection. People don't have a pickaxe at home for protection. They have a firearm at home for protection because they are lethal. If someone attempts suicide with a gun, they're more likely to die. Mm. If someone attacks a school with a gun versus any other weapon, more people are going to be seriously injured and killed. And so I think we need to be able to have that conversation and say, it's not that the presence of a gun causes someone to do that thing, but if they are intent on violence, if they decide to act in a violent way, mm-hmm. it's going to have far more serious consequences.
So, Emmy, do you think I'm a hypocrite to agree with the caller and you?
No, I don't. But I think it's just, I think the argument that people sometimes make, and I'm not sure that's what Lee was trying to do, but saying it's not the guns, stop blaming the guns. Like, I don't think that is a fair thing to do. Like, we have to be able to talk about the fact that these are lethal weapons that people need to be, we need to be thinking about what it means to be a responsible gun owner and to recognize that they cause far more damage than other weapons.
Let's go to David, who's in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. David, go ahead. Welcome to the middle.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm an ER nurse. I've been in ERs for over a decade, and I feel like, to agree with your current speaker, I think the issue here really is access to guns. They are incredibly lethal, and for those of you who have never seen gunshot wounds up close, they're incredibly effective when shot by amateurs, especially to innocent bystanders. So we need to really recognize the lethality of guns, but also recognize a system that is innately ignoring key aspects that lead to gun violence. We don't effectively fund education. We don't utilize resources to get people out of poverty. And I think I think too many legislators capitulate to the NRA, even for the most meaningful of legislation. And it breaks my heart because I'm tired of seeing people who don't need to die because of gun violence. So thank you again for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David. And John, let me ask you, the NRA, you just brought up, has lost more than 1 million members out of 6 million at its peak in 2018. Its revenue has dropped by more than 40% since 2016. Mm. We've heard about the controversy, the legal troubles. How strong is the gun lobby these days?
So I would suggest that it's just not the NRA. In Colorado, we have a gun group that I'd rather not mention by name because I don't think they're particularly helpful to gun owners, who are way more aggressive than the NRA. Mm. And so those private clubs, those private initiatives, they go after you. If you're a Republican and dare say some of the things I've said today, you ain't running for office in Colorado unless it's, well, and you won't. And win. I'm not sure about the NRA is important as local gun groups.
All right, let's get one more call in from Fabio, who's in Chicago. Fabio, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, this is something that's really it touched my life because, you know, I was not born and raised in the United States. I moved here just in 2005, right? So when I listen all these debates, I can't understand because, you know, I even heard tonight someone saying that the problem are not the guns, right? If you want to solve gun violence, there is nothing else you can do if not taking away guns from the hands of the citizens, of the common citizens, right? And to do so, you don't have to, you know, watch so far away. You know what I mean? You can watch Canada. You can watch, you know, Europe in general. You can watch all the African countries. You can watch all the countries in the world that don't have the amount of people that died for gunshot, like in the United States of America, right? I watch the statistics. You know, I'm a scientist as a background, so just watch the statistics, and you understand that the only problem with gun violence is the incredible amount of guns that are present in the United States of America. I mean, we have more guns than citizens.
Fabio, thank you for that call. And I'll just go to you, Emmy, with this one thought, which is I've got a friend who lives in the United Kingdom who's American and won't bring her children back to the United States because she worries about school shootings and she does not there.
I mean, I get that, right? It is a uniquely American issue, the mass shootings and school shootings. And yes, there have been attacks in other countries, isolated or with fewer victims or stabbings or so forth. I think I come back always to when I'm at my work as an ER doctor and wanting to support the health and well-being of every person in front of me. If we banned guns tomorrow, banned the sale of guns tomorrow, all guns in the United States, and let me be clear, that's not happening. Like, it's just not, right? There are more guns than people in the United States right now.
It's amazing.
We're not going to confiscate all of those guns. So what do we do today and tomorrow to prevent the injuries and deaths that nobody wants? And that's where I always end up.
Well, and we will continue our conversation online, and you can call in and leave a message at 844-464-3353. But Tolliver, I just want to hear what's coming in online because you've said hundreds of comments.
Yeah, absolutely. TikTok commenter says, gun violence has been on a steady decline for a while now. The media covers it much more than they used to. That's why it seems so bad, which kind of runs counter to what you talked about, you know, an increase in mass shootings. Jim in Champaign, Illinois says guns are not at all well suited for actual defense. We would all be better off designing such tools better suited for the task, like temporary blinding lights, lasers, and wire ties for the wrists.
Interesting. All right. Well, you can reach out to us from Champaign, right next to my hometown.
Exactly.
Tolliver, thank you. And I want to thank my guest, Emmy Betts, emergency medicine physician and director of the Firearm Injury Prevention Initiative at the University of Colorado Medical School. Emmy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And John Brackney, a longtime civic and business leader here in Colorado and advocate for responsible gun ownership. John, thank you very much as well.
Search for common ground. Thank you.
Absolutely. Tolliver, what is on tap for next week?
For next week's show, we want to hear your thoughts about public service. Do you feel a call to serve your country? What does public service mean to you as a member of the armed services, as a volunteer, or even as a politician? You can call us at 844-464-3353 or write in at listentothemiddle.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter.
The Middle is brought to you by Longnook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, John Barth, and Danny Alexander. Our technical director is Jason Croft. And a special thanks this week to Colorado Public Radio, Jillian Coldsnow, Tyler Bender, Matt Hertz, Sheridan Ash, and Stuart Vanderwelt. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Haig, and we want to thank Nashville Public Radio, iHeartMedia, and the more than 400 public radio stations that are making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Talk to you next week.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.